Mini-episode 1878 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1878. You have with you here today two of your favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Fran Stuckberry, and of course, Fran, the great sports writer from Our Sports Central. It is great to be able to have him on the show all the time here as we do through the year to talk college football. We've had him on to talk any number of sports also. There's a great range of sports that are covered at Our Sports Central, and Fran has probably written about just about every one of them at one point or another. And again, he's always been our lead guy for talking college football, going back a number of years on the show. And so we're here today for our 2025 college football stretch run. Always a pleasure to have you in, buddy. How you doing today?
Doing great, Rick. It's been a lot of surprises this college football season. Teams have started on top and are not there anymore.
That's right. That's right. And some coaches that are not there anymore or not going to be there anymore. We'll be getting to that because that's a big part of our story of the season that we're getting to. And in terms of who we expected to be there and not be there, there are a number of both categories represented. Of course, every week you can find us on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, our college and pro football tip sheet that we have with college and pro picks and power rankings and fantasy football non-gimme recommendations for the week. So every week on there, I'm giving a little bit of a preview of this week's one. We have our top 12 on there, what would be our college football playoff rankings as of today, if the season ended today, and then our next four teams in. So I'll give you a chance to react to this, Fran. Here's the top 12 as I have it slotted right now. One Ohio State, two Indiana, by the way, setting up one heck of a Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis in a couple of weeks if this holds up. Three Texas A&M, four Alabama, five Georgia, six Oregon, seven Georgia Tech, eight Mississippi, nine Miami, 10 Vanderbilt, 11 BYU, 12 Memphis. Our next four in Texas Tech, Louisville, Notre Dame, and Virginia. And in looking at this, Fran, there's any number of teams right on the cusp of that. I was eyeballing for the last spots there, potentially Texas, potentially Houston, potentially Navy over Memphis for the number 12 spot in the rankings here. And they will get a chance to play that out on the field, I believe, on Thanksgiving night. That will be a huge one. It's at this point, it looks like winner gets in, loser goes home as far as the playoff chances there. But any thoughts on how I have the team slotted thus far?
I like that. And this year in the college football rankings, you can have they go by seed, so you can't you don't have to win your conference championship. Indiana, that's interesting. I mean, Rick, I expect Indiana to be good, but not this good. Now look at the contract extension, cursing Netty guy. Amazing. He's $11.5 million. He's their highest paid coach in college football. NIL, Rick, I mean, we thought in some instances it would ruin college football. Meanwhile, it gave Indiana life.
It did, and I'll tell you what, Fran, I truly, truly believe when you look at the top rankings right now, I really think that for the coaches like Brian Kelly that had one foot on the banana peel and since slipped off of it, and the other ones that still have one foot on the banana peel, Norvell, Freeze, et cetera, I think one of the things that's making it worse for them is there's no way you can convince me, no way whatsoever, that the alums aren't looking at them and going, wait a minute, Indiana's in the top 10. Vanderbilt's in the top 10. Mississippi, Georgia Tech. Okay, there's no way that the alums aren't looking at this and saying, if they can do it, how come you can't do it? We backed up the Brinks truck to get you to this damn school. You ain't getting it done. I really think that it's Kurt Cignetti and everybody else that's really, really, really taking away the oxygen from the top coaches who are underachieving.
Well, definitely. That's why a lot of these coaches got fired, and we'll go over that shortly.
Yes. Yes, we will. And I think also, too, one of the things that you could put side by side with that is you have these schools. I mean, again, Indiana and Vanderbilt being in contention to make the playoffs. Indiana actually made it last year, and almost equally astounding, Texas A&M, because year in and year out, they are a team that if you just looked at the talent that they had, you'd be like, okay, yeah, they are one of the top teams in the country, but they almost always underachieve. I didn't realize, I hadn't seen it up until the LSU game when I did see it, that the strength and conditioning coach, Brian Kelly, ran him out of there. The guy who'd been there for three national championships ends up going to Texas A&M. Yeah, no wonder things are different than they were in the past, as well as the caliber of players staying strong, as well as the coaching being stronger than it was in the Jimbo Fisher years there at Texas A&M. But in looking at this, let's look at the major conferences first. And of the two mega conferences, the one that's been the thinner one, slightly thinner, as it was last year, is the Big Ten, because you have Ohio State and Oregon. They were both expected to be very, very strong coming into the season. Both are very well poised to make the playoff here at this point. Indiana, as we talked about here, they're going to be a team that they look like, yeah, even if they lose the Big Ten championship game, and I think they would be a decent underdog in that game, they should still get a bye. They should still be among the top four teams. If the only loss they have is to Ohio State, of course they should get a bye. But you've got Penn State that fell off the mountain right here. Everybody had them slotted for a bye in the playoff this year before the season started. But James Franklin, once things unraveled, they unraveled quickly. So Penn State won't be in the playoff. Michigan, at this point here, again, even if they win out, and it would be impressive if they could beat Ohio State yet again, but you know, they don't look like a team that has the caliber of the makings of making it to the playoff this year. The Michigan State rebuilding project remains a work in progress, and we're putting that kindly here. USC has not really ascended to the point yet of being that strong in the Big Ten. Washington's had a really good year, but they're still not at the point of being a contender. So on down the line it goes. It's really Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon at this point that are the class of the conference. And who saw this one coming? Because you and I talked about this, again, like all the marginal programs in the conference, the ones that if everything really broke their way in a good year, might be able to win the Western Division when there still was a Western Division. By the way, Iowa having a good year. I mean, they were sort of right on the cusp too. But like we said at the time, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, all these teams that had almost a bye if they had any kind of decent season whatsoever to the Big Ten championship game, wave goodbye to that. Well, we spoke too soon when we were talking about Indiana. You're truly only one good coach away from ever really turning it around in any conference, it seems like.
Well, Rick, back to Penn State. I mean, me and you, we still didn't. A lot of people had Penn State going to national championship and win them, but we both had Ohio State because we felt James Franklin can't win the big game, and he can't. And like I said, I mean, he had a good record at Penn State, but the expectations, the hype, the NIL, all the stuff, and it just all fell apart. And now James Franklin says he'll win a national championship with another team. He has to win a big game first, Rick. Yeah, he didn't, Rick, and that's the thing. But James Franklin, he hasn't won. How many big games has he won in his coaching career? Few, if any.
Apparently four of them, because I think he was 4-21 against top 10 teams. And this was one of these things where, again, he hired away Jim Knowles from Ohio State. And I think there was the thought that, like, well, Ryan Day finally kicked the door in, so maybe James Franklin can stop choking also. But that was kind of a flawed analysis, because he was even worse in big games than Ryan Day was. He was Ryan Day's bitch, and Ryan Day struggled in a lot of other big games over the years. And this is truly one of these things where, when you look at it, that again, Franklin just coming up short so many times, people really got sort of taken in by the fact that, like, oh, he made it to the Final Four last year. Yeah, it was a real glide path to make it there because of the the way that they seeded teams last year, they ended up being really, really strong favorites in the first two games that they ended up playing. So they had the easiest path to the Final Four of any of the teams that made it there. So it was really a situation where, again, I thought they'd make the playoff again like they did last year. I mean, I was somewhat fooled, but I wasn't fooled that much. I didn't think that they were going to be a real strong contender to win the national championship. And, oh, by the way, this whole thing about what his overall record is, I always say that about Ryan Day. Like, people used to say at the time, like, Ryan Day, how can you criticize him? His record at Ohio State is 999-8. Yeah, but in terms of games that really mattered, he was like 8-8, okay? Because it's like, if you're at that level of a program, we can throw out your games against most of the teams you play. You're expected to beat them. You're expected to really romp on them in a number of cases. The number of games that really, really matter is tiny. And one of the biggest ways of demagoguing and talking about how great a coach is to talk about his overall record. Because in 2025, the only thing that matters is your record against top programs. Everything else, Fran, you can throw it out the window.
It's crazy, Rick, with NIL and the expectations are through the roof. And so many schools, Rick, people giving the money are having more say than they should be. And it makes you wonder where if coaches want to stay in a comfort zone or be right in the frying pan in some of these markets.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's really, really difficult to be able to stand in there if you're not winning the big games consistently. You've got a little bit deeper of a situation with the mega conferences in the SEC, which I think is to be somewhat expected. And the notion that, again, somewhat these schools are kind of chewing each other up a little bit as far as Alabama and Georgia both have one loss on their record at this point. And the last team standing that's undefeated is Texas A&M, which, as I said previously, had always been the team that would underachieve probably the most relative to its talent level in the conference. Texas, who I thought coming into the season would beat Ohio State in a rematch in the national championship game. They're not going to make the playoffs the way things are going at this point. They could make it, but they'll need a lot of help and they'll need to play much better down the stretch. So you've got Mississippi still right there in the mix. Mississippi is poised to be able to make the playoffs, absent anything more really going wrong with them. They've got a loss on their record, as does Vanderbilt. It was very interesting to see Vanderbilt playing Missouri in a game where it was sort of a play-in game for the playoffs here. Missouri's now on the outside looking in, but this is why, again, the Vanderbilt and Missouri coaches are on short lists to get hired away by much bigger programs because of the success that they have brought there. Whereas programs like Auburn are really kind of feeling the heat right now. My Tennessee Vols have had a good year offensively, better than people thought they were going to when we lost our quarterback to UCLA prior to the season. Didn't really work out too well for him, did it now? Although defensively, Tennessee, like if we could stop anybody, we'd be in much better position than we are. It's been kind of a tough season for South Carolina relative to expectations because Sellers came into the year with a lot of hype and has not really lived up to the hype. So it's the usual situation in the SEC where you've got some teams that are riding high, some teams that are very nice surprises, some teams that are very poor surprises. And one of the poorest surprises in the country, unsurprisingly, based on the way this went, LSU firing Brian Kelly. And again, the same the athletic director that's there is the same guy who he hired him and set him up with the contract, who ended up setting up Jimbo Fisher with a nice big fat contract to Texas A&M. This guy is responsible for the two biggest buyouts in the history of college football. And I think you sent me a thing today where the governor of Louisiana was like, yeah, this bozo is not going to be hiring our next coach. We'll have the board of trustees set up a search committee or do some kind of workaround. So, yeah, LSU is emblematic right now of the really troubled big-time programs in the country.
Well, the thing is, Rick, when Brian Kelly took the job, I thought he was a fish out of water. He was at the LSU basketball game court and did a fake Southern accent. That makes no damn sense. It just he just wasn't the right fit. I mean, he's a Midwest guy. It wasn't the right fit. And the previous three coaches, Ogeron, Saban, and Les Miles all won national championships when they coached the team. It's just he was not the right fit. Now he has $53 million. Alabama, after that loss to Florida State, everyone's like, "Oh my God, Kalen DeBoer can't do it." And now they quietly have played well, and they're playing some good football. Texas A&M's been under the radar. You know, they're just getting it done offensively, and they had a big win against Notre Dame early in the season, which some people did not see. And as for Vanderbilt, Rick, is Diego Pavia an NFL quarterback? I'm not so sure, but I will say one thing. In 2028, when they have the flag football Olympics in L.A., he should be a starting quarterback for Team USA. I think that'd be a lot of hype. He can make those plays. He can make those runs. It'd be interesting to see Diego Pavia win gold for USA.
That would be amazing. Yes, I would like to see that. And by the way, speaking of quarterbacks and quarterbacks at non-traditional powers who are riding high right now, I would be remiss if I didn't circle back briefly and say that I've been saying since early in the season, Fernando Mendoza, QB1 in next year's NFL draft. Book it. That guy's the real deal. Anybody that's got any kind of bad record whatsoever right now should be tanking for that guy, even though it does seem like you've got Caleb Downs and a couple of other players, defensive players, who are going to be on top of a lot of the draft boards next year. But quarterback need kind of trumps everything, as my hometown Cleveland Browns are illustrating throughout the course of the year here. So if you're going to tank for anybody, it should be Fernando Mendoza. But yeah, Vanderbilt, a very interesting quarterback situation there. They're getting it done. There's been talk of Penn State possibly hiring away another Vandy head coach, which would be kind of funny. Sort of kind of the way of like Butch Jones used to follow around Brian Kelly to every job that he would leave before. So, you know, some of these, I don't hear Butch Jones's name on the short list at LSU though. So these things don't always work out.
So what do you do if you're Lane Kiffin? Do you go to LSU? Do you stay in Ole Miss? What exactly do you do? Because he can win at Ole Miss and not have the stress. If he goes to LSU, he's going to make more money. But the problem is, it's going to be crazy over there. I mean, with the boosters and the people behind the scenes. Florida, the team's been terrible for the last 5, 6, 7 years, and they love their football, but that's an attractive job in the SEC. Arkansas, well, is that Bobby Petrino's job to lose? It'll be a fun coaches show we do in the future on that.
Well, yeah, and again, with Arkansas, again, they can make a splash anytime that the Tyson money says that they can, because that's how they ended up getting Calipari to come from Kentucky. They've done it in other sports. I don't see them doing it here. I don't see them luring anybody the level of Lane Kiffin away. I will say this. The cynic in me and the Tennessee fan says, I feel like Lane Kiffin was put on this earth in the end to coach at Florida, because the way that he backstabbed Tennessee all those years ago, taking the USC job in the dead of night, you know, seeing that guy come back, nothing will juice up the annual Tennessee-Florida game like having Lane Kiffin on the Florida sidelines. I'm predicting on a cynical level that will end up happening. But this is the kind of offseason that we're going to be approaching. It happens every 3 or 4, sometimes 5 years, but generally 3 to 4 years, where a whole bunch of big jobs come open. And like I said, Auburn and Florida State aren't even officially open yet, but they will be. So, you know, if you're out there in the Big 12 and you got a nice young coach, you might want to guard your coach or preemptively start giving any type of, you know, lucrative extensions at this point. Now, right now, I've got BYU, and I've had them listed as a playoff team for a good chunk of the year. I've believed in them more than a lot of people have. So Coach K is going to be certainly on a lot of the coaching short lists out there. And of course, Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State. You've got any number of teams in that conference that are in really strong shape. Cincinnati has had a nice kind of a bounce back at this point. The aforementioned Houston Cougars, as we were talking about before, bouncing back in Florida or in football as strongly as they have in basketball in the last decade. In the last year, Houston has replicated that in football. Texas Tech, with the huge amount of money that they've been spreading around, they have been right there in the midst of the scene this year and seem poised at this point to be able to make the Big 12 championship game. You've got Iowa State, which has kind of been on the periphery of this. Kansas State has been a little bit disappointing to this stretch of the season here. They've been pretty strong the last couple of years, but I don't see them obviously advancing to the Big 12 championship game. But you've got any number of teams here, and we talked about this coming in, that it's a conference where it's very entertaining through the course of the year. There's nobody that you look at and you say, oh, they're a serious national championship contender. But those two playoff spots, there are so many games through the course of the season that just have an impact on who's going to make it. And notice that not once at any point in time have I even mentioned the darling of 2 years ago, Colorado, because they have not really followed up on what was the promise of where they were supposed to be at this point. And it certainly have not replaced Sanders and Hunter in terms of the impact that they lost when they went into the NFL draft last year. So they are not part of what has been a very winnable conference and what should be a very part of, you know, for a team that is supposed to be at that level at by this point, year three of Coach Prime, they are not part of the title picture in this deep, but good, but not great conference.
Well, Rick, growing up in the 1990s, when Vince McMahon used to say, anything can happen in the WWF. Well,
yep.
Anything can happen in the Big 12 conference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at Arizona State, that a lot of people picked them for last year in the preseason rankings for the Big 12. And like, I was more of a believer in them than anybody. And I think I had them picked for like third from the bottom. But if we grade on the curve, I was a believer in the Sun Devils. But just looking at what's been done out there, that it is such a deep conference. There, Utah as well. Utah had that game a couple weeks ago, the big rivalry game with BYU that was going to be very, very impactful. It always is. So, yeah, I mean, just all of the teams here. And BYU has been a team that both in football and in basketball has been very, very impactful as far as the NIL money. This upcoming college basketball season, A.J. DeBancia, likely the number one pick in next year's NBA draft. He goes to the Cougars to play out this year. Igor Demin, who went to the Brooklyn Nets in last year's NBA draft, he was a guy who came from overseas. I've been predicting that NIL money was going to bring a lot of the overseas players, instead of them playing in the Euro leagues, to go into the NBA, the chance to go to that they have an NBA, or they have a basketball program there that's very NBA ready as far as the coaching staff and the style and everything. And the commitment is there on the football side as well. And BYU is a program that, again, you go back to the 1984 national championship, and they are a team that historically has been able to field strong teams out there. And again, in the age of NIL, right now they're standing atop the Big 12. Who knows if they'll be there in a couple of weeks? But yeah, the Big 12 is the most entertaining conference in the country, I think, the last 2 years, friend. No question about it.
Oh, it definitely is, Rick. I mean, I think BYU will get to the title game. Iowa State looked hot in the beginning of the season. I was really impressed with how they played them in Ireland when they beat Kansas State. I thought they were going to be really contending, and then they just faltered apart. Colorado, I mean, the hype, you know, they had the Heisman Trophy win. That doesn't surprise me. Utah has been a little up and down, but game day is going to be there this week, so that's a gorgeous backdrop of those mountains over there. But
yes.
The Big 12, Texas Tech, they spend their money. They spend their money, and that's what happens. The NIL, that's why Texas Tech is doing well. And as far as Oklahoma State, that's another coach that got fired. They didn't spend any money. That's probably why he got fired.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if T. Boone Pickens was still around, it'd probably be a different story. I can only imagine what that guy would be spending in the era of NIL, but we'll never know. But you look at the other of the non-mega Big Four conferences, that would be the ACC, and you have a really mixed bag there. Once you get past Miami, but Miami having that banana peel loss a couple weeks ago, I joked about that at the time. Somebody must have changed Mario Cristobal's calendar. He obviously thinks it's the month of November losing a game like that. But again, Clemson has really fallen off at this point here, such that there's rumors that Dabo Swinney might go elsewhere, maybe to LSU or somewhere. One wonders if they would even want to necessarily do that, given how allergic he's been to really kind of exploiting the transfer portal the way that everybody needs to. But you have some teams here that have really exceeded expectations, none more so than Georgia Tech. Louisville has been very strong. Virginia, Pittsburgh has been fairly decent from time to time here. The biggest flop of them all, and I had predicted way, way, way back last winter when I was making my initial first predictions here for the season, I thought North Carolina had a good chance of winning the conference simply because of money. Because they had raised, like, I was hearing the $20 million figure, which is what Ohio State spent last year on players. But money cannot help you avoid disorganization and toxicity and everything else going on with the program there in Chapel Hill, one of the biggest underachievers in the country. And there's no way when the administration decided that they were going to try and reel in Chapel Bill to be their head coach, that they thought that their program would be in worse shape than it was a year ago. And yet, Fran, here we are, and it's happening right in your backyard.
Well, Rick, as I messaged you a few weeks ago when Miami lost to Louisville, that doesn't shock me. And now they don't even control their own destiny to get the AC title game. They're going to need some help going there. But I think SMU is going to give Miami a good game this week on the road.
Yes.
I think SMU got quote looking ahead against Wake Forest last week. I think SMU is going to play better. Louisville, Jeff Brom, a guy I interviewed back in 2001 when he played for the SFL. But in all seriousness, Jeff Brom, if he wants one of those high-profile jobs, he can have it. I mean, he wins big games all the time everywhere he's gone.
Yes, absolutely. He seems like a guy that could be poised to move on to one of these mega jobs that's opening up here. And again, building a strong program in the Big 12 and in the ACC, it is a good stepping stone to some of these other programs right now. You look
and
at the group.
Rick, as far as we're in NC State, I mean, Dave Doran, you win enough, but you're not going to win. You're not going to get to that next level. I think he should be on the coaching block, especially if he gets picked by Georgia Tech this week. And in North Carolina Chapel Bill, I mean, they'll give him another year. I mean, close comes to horseshoes, too. Last drive losses, but still, I mean, the hype, the expectation, a good first half against TCU, and since then it's been a mess.
It has been, no question about it. And you look at the Group of Five conferences, and it's been a little bit of a hot potato right now as far as the that playoff spot that one of them is going to get. Early in the year, it seemed like Boise State took themselves out of consideration, South Florida subsequently. Some right now would have Memphis in that spot, as I do. Some would even say Navy. Like I said, that game Thanksgiving night between Navy and Memphis is going to hold a lot of significance as things stand now for that spot. There are conferences like the MAC where whatever ends up happening there isn't going to end up playing a part in what happens here. What I'm wondering is that this is a circumstance where, you know, if Navy goes through, and let's say that Navy ends up getting the number 12 playoff spot with like one loss. I'm wondering, I'm looking at this here, like, are they going to be locked in even if they lose to Army? Because they've got to lock in the playoffs the week before. So if you're looking at it, they're like, Navy is the best one loss team out of the Group of Five. I'm presupposing that they'd have a loss in there but still make it. But then they end up being a two loss team. I don't think there's any way to basically undo that. You've locked in what the playoff is. There's no way of saying Navy's in if they win. Otherwise, it goes to Memphis or some other type of school. So that whole thing with the Army-Navy game, that thing of like, it takes me back years and years and years at Ohio State. This was one of these years, I think, back in the 80s when Michigan had already clinched the Rose Bowl. And I think Earl Bruce was like, we're going to send them to the Rose Bowl with a bloody nose. Like, if you're Army, it's I don't know how much the great feeling they could take in this, but like, we're going to send them to the playoff with a bloody nose. That could be what we're looking at in the Army Navy game this year if it breaks that way.
Well, Rick, AAC, it looks like one of those teams has the odds of getting that final bid. It can go a lot of different ways, and also I believe Navy's on Notre Dame's schedule, so that'd be
yes.
That's if they beat Notre Dame, I mean that's a big big win for them.
Yeah,
as far as the other conferences are concerned, Mountain West, Boise State looks like to be the after a couple of disappointing early season losses, seems to be doing well. And the MAC, that's up for grabs for anyone can have. But the thing is, they're talking about a Bowling Green named Pudge. You have a Heisman Trophy coach there. And everyone's talking about a cat getting name, image, and likeness named Pudge for Bowling Green. Eddie George.
Yeah. Yeah, truly unbelievable. Things happen every year in college football that we never see coming, and that was one of those things, certainly.
And in the Sun Belt, you have Kennesaw State after going 2-10. They won 6 games. They're going bowl eligible. They're bowl eligible this year. And also in the Mountain West Conference, Hawaii, Timmy Chang's doing a great job. They also are bowl eligible for the first time since 2021 season.
Yeah, yeah. So that is something noteworthy that's happening there. And, the group of 5 conferences. And again, next year, many of the teams in the Mountain West splitting away to become part of the, I think you have to put this in air quotes, new Pac-12. I mean, Pac-12 in name only, because it's going to be basically a mid-major. But so it's the last year as we know it of the Mountain West as the Pac-12 ends its 2-year sabbatical into purgatory here of being nothing but Washington State and Oregon State, where, as I joke every November, the Pac-12 game of the year is the Pac-12 game of the year. So things will change in that regard next year. And again, who ends up being the sacrificial lamb to go lose to the number 5 seed on Friday night, the first weekend of the playoffs, we shall see. Or it could be Saturday afternoon. I'm not sure which games ESPN might be jockeying to get and to foist off onto TNT based on what some of these matchups may be. But this is certainly a circumstance where, again, you and I always convene yet again once the season is done, once the playoff slots are set and the bowl slots are set. You and I always do a preview in there in about early to mid December, and I will look forward to doing that again, Fran.
Thanks, Rick. I mean, it's been a fun college bowl season where there's been a lot of surprises. And the thing is, during the season, everyone had penciled in Texas and Penn State national championship, not us. And I mean, never even spoke about Arch Manning. Look at all the hype he had because he is a Manning, and now we don't even know how good of a quarterback he's going to be.
Well, I was believing the hype. I really thought that he was going to come in strong. I mean, he had been one of the most coveted, almost beyond 5-star quarterbacks in quite a long time based on his prep play and the way that he had looked over a period of time. But, yeah, he has yet to really look like that guy. And so everything that he was saying about, hey, don't listen to my grandpa, I'm going to be back for my senior season. Obviously, at this point, that's going to be the case because he's going to need the next year to kind of re-elevate himself to that place in the draft conversation. But
Rick, I'm going to make a prediction on the FBH lounge. Why not? If Texas continues to falter, I see Steve Sarkisian leaving for an NFL job like it's been rumored. Last week, he was rumored about maybe as a possible coach for the Titans. I mean, look at these college coaches going back to the NFL, like Chip Kelly and some of these other coaches. It wouldn't shock me if Texas does fall apart and the boosters and all the people there, maybe he gets out of the heat and goes back and coaches in the NFL.
Maybe, but I mean, Sarkisian, after things not going well at USC, that's a thing where being at a job like Texas, that would be a tough job to give up until and unless things just really got unbearable for him there. So we'll have to see what that ends up looking like. And again, if they don't fall apart too much down the stretch, his seat might be not getting that warm. Certainly the Texas A&M game is going to loom very, very, very large, larger than it has for quite a long time. But a true pleasure to get into all of this with you, Fran Stuckberry, and we'll look forward to doing it again once we know where everybody is going for the matchups in the college football postseason.
Thanks, Rick. It's been a pleasure as always.
Always great to have you on, Fran. Thank you so much for being here and for lending your expertise. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1878.